The year this week's album came out, NBC debuted The Office, which is the best workplace sitcom ever. Fight me. John Roberts succeeded William Rehnquist as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and Hurricane Katrina devastated the Caribbean and Louisiana, creating one of the biggest natural disasters in North American recorded history, which led to one of the greatest humanitarian crises in American history. Finally, civil rights activist Rosa Parks passed away at 92 years old. She was the first woman to lay an honor in the Capitol Rotunda, a well-deserved end for a woman who had started her public life by refusing to move to the back of the bus and led the charge to equality for all Americans. You've probably guessed it by now, the year was 2005, the artist is Jack Johnson, and the album is In Between Dreams. Today, on Two Dudes and Tunes. Well, howdy. Welcome to the show where two dudes drink and know some stuff about music. That's right. Welcome to Two Dudes and Tunes, the show where Chris and I get together and talk about tunes. I'm Wood, one of the dudes, and like I already said, Chris is here with me tonight. Chris, you clearly are the brains of this outfit. I'm stumbling all over myself. Tell me something enlightening.
Well, if I'm the brains of the outfit, how come I'm frantically Googling enlightening quotes to make you laugh at the beginning of this? And my time has run out. Nailed I have it. Hit the deadline. And so we'll let the listeners be the judge of who is the brains of the operas. I can't even speak. Who is the brains of the operation? I only had one beer during dinner. I don't know what's going on right now.
What's new with you, Chris?
Oh, man. Tell you what, it's just been a whirlwind. This past weekend, my wife and I went down to Roswell to see a couple of our friends off to their new place. We helped them move in, and that was a lot of work. Moving is always a lot of work. Doesn't matter whether it's you or you're just helping somebody, it's the same amount of work every time. It is exhausting. So spent Labor Day weekend there and got some like torrential downpour. So I had to call in on Monday. Ooh. Which I should have been excited about it, but I'm very much a plans person. If I have a plan, I want to stick to it. Mm-hmm. And I hate calling in because I'm always worried I'm going to let somebody down or I'm going to get griped at. So. But I called in. It was nice. We got to see our friends off and like hang out instead of just moving boxes around. So it was good. Yeah. How about you? How's your week gone?
Well, kind of like your friends, Tiffany and I have kind of just been trying to decide what's next for us. Maverick is coming up on either 8 or 9 months old. I should probably know that off the top of my head, but he's definitely, you know, sitting up and doing all the stuff that, you know, a 9 month old does for sure. Mm-hmm. And so we're starting to, like, I had to lower the crib down last night because he's getting to the point that he pulls himself up and is trying to pull himself over the rails. And when he's sitting up, he was looking over the rails at us. So it's like, it's time for this to go down. But then it's like, well, what do you do? Like, do we move him into a bedroom now or pretty soon? And that entails going up and downstairs at all hours of the day and night. And so we're kind of at this kind of crossing roads where it's like, all right, are we going to sell this place? Are we going to move? The housing market isn't so great if you're trying to buy a house right now. It's better if you're selling a house.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those catch 22, you know, what do we want in a house and where will we be? And then there's the dreaded moving part. And I swear this time around, my mantra will be, you know, professional moving crew.
Oh, PMC. Yes.
I'm done moving myself.
I do not blame you. It's a lot of work. We had help. Like, it wasn't just me and Megan helping our friends. he had both of his brothers and his sister-in-law and his mom came by. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, many hands make light work. There's your enlightening quote.
Yes.
The day. But man, it was still like, we're still, maybe it's because like I'm 31 and Megan's approaching 30, but we're still hungover from that. So if you can at all hire somebody to tote all that stuff around.
Yeah, even if it's just across town. I mean, they moved out of state. That's an even bigger endeavor.
Well, yeah, but it was only, thankfully, I know I should be yes-anding you and going, why yes, it is quite hard. But thankfully, they only moved like a couple hours away. Mm-hmm. And to boot, it's like one turn. you get on the highway
get
and
on
make
the
one
highway
turn
and keep going until
yeah,
you hit
that's
Roswell.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, man, it doesn't matter whether it's like half an hour across town or 2 hours. It is just a bear. So I'm glad that you're going to take it easy on yourself and let somebody else do the work. That's the way to do it.
I say that now. We'll see what happens when I get a quote for moving all of our stuff, and then I'll be like, nope, we're doing this ourselves.
Ooh, turns out it's cheaper to not buy a house and not move at all.
Yeah, I guess we'll be doing the stairs with a baby. But, yeah, no.
Well, hey, there's no better way for him to learn than by experience, right? I mean, I don't have a kid, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that we didn't buy this house thinking we were going to have kids in it, so or at least have babies in it. So that's kind of one of those, like, oh. So right now he lives in our dining room. That's his nursery at the moment, and we'll think of something soon, I hope.
But better watch out. If he becomes a drummer, he's going to pull all those pots and pans out.
Oh.
And you're going to have noise and mobility to deal with.
So we have this this fencing system to keep the dogs away from him, but it like snaps together kind of like Legos, and he has already learned to take his toy truck that makes noise like a siren sound and beat it against the walls of this plastic thing that makes just the most god awful cacophony of music and sirens going off, and he just does that all just bing 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 bing.
Oh man, that's amazing.
I'll try and record it for some B-roll, and I'll drop it in under me telling the story, because he thinks it's the greatest thing ever. He giggles the whole time, and I'm sitting there like, can we like watch TV? No. Bang, bang, bang.
Oh, man. He's already learned how to protest. That's fantastic.
I've been watching on Disney Plus, they have the old TV show Dinosaurs, which was a Henson production back in the 90s. Uh-huh. And I remember loving that as a kid. So we've been rewatching it all. And my baby is turning into Baby Sinclair, definitely.
Has it said not the mama to your wife yet?
Not yet, but he definitely likes hitting stuff. So
So he's quarter of the way there. That's funny.
Well, that's about all I have for small talk this week. Chris, you ready to dive into this album?
Yeah, let's get In Between Dreams.
Nice.
It's a professional podcasting ethos that we espouse here at Two Dudes and Tunes, ladies and gentlemen.
Man, that transition was just chef's kiss perfect.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So we are talking.
I worked long and hard on it, looking at the title just now and going, my time has arrived.
So we are talking about Jack Johnson's March 1st, 2005 album, In Between Dreams, this week. This was on my list, and I'm excited that it kind of hit up on our list and we got to do it. The Oracle picked it for us. Tell me a little bit about your first experience with this album, if you remember it, or Jack Johnson in general.
Yeah, I would have to go with the Jack Johnson in general option, only because I remember him being absolutely everywhere. If you were in a Barnes and Noble, if you were at a coffee shop, which those two are practically the same thing, friends' cars, like at Target, this album was absolutely everywhere. And I have the unfortunate memory of being kind of a snob about this album, as I was about most things that weren't released between 1969 and 1979. But I remember griping about Jack Johnson, just like, oh, this guy is so simple and his voice is sleepy. And I'm here to say that I was wrong, that I found it delightful. And we'll get into that. But I actually put this music on initially while I was doing some yard work. I had to do some emergency yard work before we went to Roswell, because we've had a lot of rain and my front yard was a jungle. And our soon-to-be former landlord texted us and was like, are you guys gonna mow? And we're like, yeah, we'll take care of it. So it's really good music just to do everyday stuff too, which I'm sure we'll get into. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of my first experience of it, because I had heard the songs all over the place, but not the whole album. Why is this album on your list?
I remember vividly when this album came out. I was about halfway through my junior year in high school, and I remember not knowing who Jack Johnson was or not being familiar with his music kind of at that point. But the album art really jumped out at me while I was at Target one night with one of my brothers, and he was there buying, I believe, the first Audioslave album. I think that's what he was there for. Nice. That night. I believe that came out the same year or right before this did. And so I remember just being kind of captivated by the artwork. It's really simple. It's kind of going back to when we talked about Elephant, monochromatic. It's black and yellow artwork, and it's the silhouette of a mango tree that was in the yard of the studio that he recorded this album at. And so I was really just kind of taken with that artwork. I really liked it, and looked at the back, the listing of the back, and kind of the instrumentation of the tracks, and I was like, oh, this looks like something I might be interested into. And so I dropped a cool $11.99, and I still have the CD in the jewel case with the $11.99 price tag on it.
Yes. So, I love that physical media. You have a lot more physical media left, I think, than I do. I've gotten rid of a lot of, well, all my CDs.
I joke about being done moving, but I've really only moved 3 times since I was in high school. I moved out of my parents' house into an apartment, and I moved from that apartment to an apartment across the parking lot to a bigger apartment, and then we moved to this house. So I've had a lot more ability to retain ownership of the stuff over the years, because I haven't really gone very far or very many places. Let's put it that way.
I think the lesson here is move that way, really tiny increments at a time. Stair step it if you can, folks. Yeah. It's a lot easier.
This time will be a lot more painful, I can tell you that. We've been here for 6 years, so.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's amazing the amount of stuff. And it seems like it grows exponentially as you become an adult.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think it's just because the amount of income you have, hopefully. I mean, if you're fortunate, as you and I are, the amount of income you have to throw towards collecting dumb stuff increases the older you get. Oh. And so before you know it, you just have warehouses of, like, hobbies.
Well, I was going to say, Tiffany had a conversation with me the other day. I was joking about getting into yet another hobby. And she was like, I will have a nervous breakdown. You are a serial collector of hobbies. And they all have just a massive amount of stuff. It's not like you can just put it into one tub and be like, this is hobby one and this is hobby two.
No,
they take up the whole garage or a whole closet, or I've got a bookshelf dedicated to a couple of different hobbies.
I, as somebody who plays Gortar,
just a beginner, I barely haven't even ever seen a Gortar,
as Andy would say, and as somebody who still plays with Legos, I can tell you, hobbies are never just like, oh, this is my notebook full of this hobby. It's like, this is my 5 or 6 gallon drum of hobby.
Yeah, exactly.
That I need to cart around.
And hobbies get so much more expensive. I mean, Lord forbid you get into grilling or smoking meats. That will be fun for you.
Oh, man. Well, it's funny you say that, actually. My friend whom I helped move, he's working at a church, and they had a tobacco and alcohol Covenant or whatever, which is not uncommon. Mm-hmm. And so I was gifted a pipe and a couple of bags of tobacco. And so I went from having like two or three different varieties of tobacco to smoke to like five. And I'm looking at that going like, oh man, what a fun hobby. I'm going to need to get a bigger box for my pipes. And so before you know it, it's going to be a shelf.
Chris, and then, Chris says that because I have about 60 varieties of pipe tobacco and
yes,
an entire bookshelf dedicated to that hobby.
It's growing is what I'm saying. It's gonna be like a thriller where you like the camera looks away and then looks back at the character and there's something really close behind him.
Hey, now you see how it grows just accidentally. You're like, oh, I can't pass this up. This is such a great deal.
Yep,
it was free. Absolutely. It needed a home.
Or in this case, people find out. They're like, oh, you do this? Would you like this? And I'm too dumb to say, no, thanks. I don't have the room.
And I'm not ambitious enough to sell it all on eBay. I'm like, yes, let me take it and resell it. Nah, we're good. I'm just going to put it on the shelf over here with the rest of the stuff.
I have two broken guitars that are testament to that. Like, should I sell these for parts? Yes. Am I going to? No. That would be ridiculous. But why would you ask?
What if I need the parts? That's what it comes down
yes,
to.
That's, And as soon as you sell that item, it's like, oh, well, I'm an idiot. But we are quite far afield of In Between Dreams.
Well, and I will say, this album has been one of those albums, kind of to tie this all together, so it's not quite a far field. This album is one of those albums that kind of ties my hobbies together. Like you said, mm-hmm. It's one of those things that you can listen to while doing everyday activities. For me, yeah. I have a playlist of music that is all about focusing on whatever I'm working on. So it's
right.
It's inoffensive to my focus. Like, it's good music. It's fun. It's not just classical, just background noise. There's actually mm-hmm. music to it that people would recognize as popular music. But it's stuff that I can listen to and kind of jam to and still focus on what I'm doing. So, like, in my day-to-day job, I do a lot of SQL pulls for massive databases of more than 100,000 vehicles. And that helps me, you know, write those SQL queries out and get them shipped out to all the different people who need them. I really like having music like this to function around and not mm-hmm. have it be at the forefront of my mind, but keep me on task. And this album instantly was that way for me. I definitely heard a couple of tracks on this album looking back on it before I bought it. They were on kind of a ripped CD that a mutual friend of ours left at a church event. Mm. And he had been playing it through the CD player or the sound system of the youth center. And a couple of tracks from this album were on it. I believe one of them you will be mentioning here in a little bit as your favorite track. So kind of stuck out that, hey, that's cool. And Banana Pancakes was definitely on it.
Banana Pancakes was everywhere. This album kind of, I think it got a lot of people into guitar, like a lot of like kind of party bros, because some of the stuff on here is really simple. Mm-hmm. And like one of my guitar teachers in college actually told me that when this album came out, he had to teach about 1,000 people how to play Banana Pancakes, because it's just such a like easy, catchy thing.
But I want to say something. As I was writing my review for this album and thinking about the way this episode would go a little bit, I found myself using the word simple a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the wrong word for this album, the more I've thought about it. Peek behind the curtain. It's been 2 weeks since you and I recorded because of stuff that happened with my life last week. And it was like, all right, I can't do this week. So we've had 14 days to marinate on this. And if I had released my review 7 days ago, it would have had simple all over it.
Yeah.
The word I think best describes this album is accessible.
Yeah.
It's something that an entry-level musician can get into and play successfully. So in that regards, it is simple, But the reason it was so everywhere, it was in every gas station, it was playing on every overhead speaker system at every hospital and bar and coffee shop, is because everybody enjoyed how accessible it was. You could play it and everybody kind of liked it.
Yeah, I think that accessibility is so interesting, because as I've gotten older and kind of tried to become more educated, I realize how much I revolted against accessibility as like a dumb young person. Not to denigrate our younger listeners, because there are definitely assuredly a lot of smarter young people than I am or I was. But, you know, like I think of a lot of the bands that I claimed to enjoy in like post high school, early college. And I go back and try and listen to some of that now, and it's inaccessible. Because other than having value, I mean, music can have value like regardless of how accessible or inaccessible it is. But what I turn to for music has changed, and the kind of like complexity or density of music is not as important to me as how effectively is it saying what it's saying, and how concisely is it saying what it's saying. And this album is really accessible, I think, because Jack Johnson doesn't overcomplicate anything. It is simple, but I do think accessible is a better term, just because, you know, these are all timbres and textures and rhythms and melodies that everybody is fairly familiar with. None of it is super dense. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to parse, like, what is this album doing? It's a lot of acoustic music. It's the kind of stuff that probably a lot of bros have played really poorly at, you know, any given frat party.
I'm doing my first gig at so-and-so's coffee shop on Thursday. Oh, they gave you the Thursday slot, huh?
Yeah. Oh, you're playing at 6 p.m. at an open mic night. Well, well, well. But I
no
like
offense,
it. I have
6 p.m. on an open mic night, players.
Yeah. But yeah, it is really accessible. And I found that accessibility to be super charming this go around. With a few years of life experience. Not that I'm old, I'm 31, like, but still, even the difference between 21 and 31 can give you some insights and some desire for simplicity that maybe isn't there earlier in life, you know?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that just still darts out at me listening to it 15 years after it's been released, and it hurts me to say this album came out, well, 16 years ago now.
Oh, man.
So it's like, shoot. But one of the things that still jumps out to me about this album, and we've talked about it on a couple of other albums here in the recent past, is just how good the lyrics are without trying to hide. They're not overly cute. They're not trying to hide any like hidden meaning about anything in particular, but there's just so much about this album, lyrically speaking, to like.
Yeah, this album got kind of, it was interesting reading the reviews. This album got slagged.
Oh, dude, brutalized.
I know. And it's tough because on the one hand, if you are looking for high art, like, you are not going to find it here.
No.
But I think there's definitely, I mean, I don't want to repeat myself too much, but there's value in something simple. But I think what he does say is like kind of interesting for what it is. When I was listening to this the second time around, after I had, it was the morning after I'd done all that yard work and listened to this, I had kind of an ideal situation for it, where I was just doing the mindless tasks that I always do in the morning and had no distractions and just had some nice headphones on and was listening to it. And the lyrics are actually kind of thoughtful for this being like on the surface, just kind of like a beach bum album.
And let's be clear. Jack Johnson is most definitely a beach bum. He's the kid of two professional surfers.
Yeah. And he also can, he can put, I'm pretty sure he's been a professional surfer. So he can put professional surfer and filmmaker on his, resume.
Multi-award winning filmmaker.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's a beach bum in the beach sense, but definitely no slacker.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was interesting. Some of his songs have kind of like an existential energy to them. In the song Never Know, he says, after all, we're just a bubble in a boiling pot, just one breath and a chain of thought. And then the chorus, we're just moments. We're clever, but we're clueless. We're just human, amusing and confusing. We're trying, but where is all this leading? We'll never know, which is like an interesting kind of like almost like a Kubrickian sort of notion to have in like a boppy acoustic Hawaiian island energy jam. And I really like that about this album. Like I won't like regale every single lyric, but like a lot of it is him kind of wrestling with different things, whether it's existence or, you know, like crying shame is kind of his, can't we all just get along tune, good people, which I found good people to be like maybe a little bit judgy, but he also says, we got heaps and heaps of what we sow. So at least he uses the word we, you know, but it was, what did you think of the lyrics? Cause I kind of found more than I was even expecting to with this album.
So I think there's a lot more to be said about what the meaning of the lyrics are. I think what I was saying earlier was just that he's not hiding meaning there. He's asking questions that are so on the nose. Like, where did all the good people go? We get heaps and heaps of what we sow. So he's asking questions that provoke you to thought without like singing about, we're all just stars in a sky and maybe one day some of us will come down and tell you about it. Like,
yeah,
but whatever. Like, cool.
So I like songs and stories that are kind of dense with like metaphor and imagery, which I know you do too, but there is something kind of pleasing about the fact that like, there's no artifice there. He's not, you know, I would say pretension is probably trying to appear as though there's more to what you're presenting than there actually is. And he doesn't do that. He just says like, hey, these are some thoughts that I have that I'm just kind of mulling over while I sip my like rum and coke on the beach.
And he's done a masterful job keeping it accessible or keeping it simple, but still conveying big ideas, big thoughts across, which the older I have become, I used to work as a video producer or film producer, whatever you want to call it, and did a ton of projects every year. And when I first started, everything had to be these huge, grand, just masterpieces. And as I've gotten older, kind of like you with your music, I've started stripping back, what can we do to boil this down to its essence? How can I still get this across, but do it in a way that is as stripped down and streamlined as absolutely possible? And I feel like Jack Johnson does a phenomenal job of that with his music and with his lyrics as well. When I look at so much of what's going on and coming out in the world today, we've kind of lost sight of that again. And this is probably like the old codger in me, like, come on, man, keep it simple.
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of respect for that, but that is something that he was just utterly destroyed over by reviewers. This is his third album. And at this point, reviewers were basically lampooning him for just being a fake Jimmy Buffett or whatever, Jimmy Buffett is the man. Like, he's got I love Jimmy.
You're a parrot head, huh?
Oh man, I'm so much more than a parrot head if it comes down to it. Like, he is just so good, but or so entertaining. Let me say that. But when I look at what Jack Johnson has gone on to do since then, he has not released an album since 2017, I believe, but he's released a bunch of singles that have been released on other people's albums, and he's still active, but we're going on four, almost 5 years since his last studio album release. And part of that's because he's got young kids and he's very, very adamant about having a balanced family versus tour life. Even when he was touring, his kids and his wife went with him everywhere. They made it a point to do sightseeing in whatever city they were in every morning to make it something that they could all be a part of. So all that said, he has continued down the same path that we see here in Between Dreams. He's continued to be authentic to who he is and what he is, and continued to make music that if you listen to this album versus his last album, you would know, you would see the through line. There has been some evolution, some change, but it's still Jack Johnson being Jack Johnson, doing Jack Johnson things in his own way. He produces, or let me correct that, he releases all of his albums under his own studio label, and he's had one production partner the whole way through, from what I can tell, to produce them, mix them, and master them. And I believe his name is Mario Caldado, Caldato. He's a Brazilian record producer who is prolific. The guy releases between 10 and 15 albums a year, mainly in France and Brazil. So,
guy does work.
Yeah, he puts in all the work.
And you know, I think Jack Johnson is kind of at a disadvantage with this album specifically and just his style in general, because with a lot of music reviewers, I think they're gonna look, you know, they're looking a lot of times at the newest, craziest stuff. And so I think when they're confronted with something like this that is really just kind of bare bones and simple from an instrumental perspective, you could probably count on one hand the amount of tracks on this album that have anything more than an acoustic guitar and a djembe. And you know what I mean? Like, if there's electric guitar and a drum set and like a bass, it's out of the ordinary. And so I think, I don't know, I think probably the simplicity of it maybe kept people from digging any deeper, or, you know, if they did look at the lyrics, they just kind of scoffed at it instead of kind of appreciating that it's, you know, he is talking about some pretty big questions just in a general way, because he's not, you know, expounding on the mysteries of the duality of man. Like, he's writing a record that he just kind of felt a vibe about, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like it strikes me as a little bit unfair how savaged he was by the critics for this.
Well, if anything, being savaged by the critics was reversely felt by the public as a whole, because this album, like you said, Spotify, this album has like 700 million listens. It's crazy. The worst rated song on this album still has 40 million listens.
Really?
On Spotify.
Huh.
So I think he was fairly successful despite all of them beating up on him.
Now, here's the question. If we take out all of the demographic that is moms in their SUVs, how many plays does he have then?
Well, he got six from me this week, so.
I mean, look, I should not throw stones in this glass house of mine, because I put this on a fair amount of times to be able to talk about it for the podcast, but also just kind of out of like, oh man, like, I know this is going to be like a fun listen. I can count on this, you know, and that's not, like I said, like, this is not, it's not going to go down in the annals of rock history, but it's also something that you can listen to when you just need some music on to crush the void of silence in the background of all our lives at certain points.
Thanks, COVID.
Oh, man.
Well, there is one thing about this album that it was funny to me because I've identified a third music sin here of we're building our way to the seven deadly music sins.
We'll get there eventually.
We will get there eventually. So we have two that are pretty hard and fast for me. The third one that I have decided to include, which was after last week's album, actually, but then this week's album just hammered it home. Tambourines do not belong in music.
Oh, that's man. That's the one I instrument that is on. Tambourines.
Oh, man, they're terrible, man. And it's because I grew up in a very conservative Christian household that went to a church that letting their hair down was the lead singer would play a tambourine.
Gasp.
And he was not good. I'm sorry, but just terrible.
Well, there are a lot of bad tambourine players and not a ton of good ones. The good ones are usually percussionists who have actually been trained, which, listeners, you might laugh, but yeah, like you need to be trained to play a rhythmical instrument correctly for it to sound good. There is a lady who played at the church that I played guitar at, and she was very explicitly not allowed to ever get her hands on any percussion instrument because although she had golden pipes, whatever the analogy for having good rhythm was, she didn't have it. And our worship leader practically flew into a panic if she ever like jokingly got a hold of, you know, tambourines or a shaker or whatever. So I get it. I don't agree, but I get it. I can see that that's a deadly sin for you.
It's just an obnoxious instrument that has no place in music. And holy cow. It is on 3/4 of the tracks on this album.
So if you're like at a show and you see like the little tambourine that's mounted to the hi-hat, on the set.
That is different because it cannot be shaken the way a handheld tambourine is no. Yeah. I don't want that in my music and I don't want
gotcha.
If it's on a drum kit, yeah, it'll make a tambourine sound or whatever, but it's not gonna be sustained. It's gonna play and it'll be done. Not when somebody's holding it and they're hitting it and up. This time it was on the downbeat. The next time it's on the upbeat. And
it's just all over the place. That's fair. Ugh.
I'm getting worked up about it right now.
The only podcast to ever give one of the hosts indigestion in the middle of the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first.
I feel like I need a drink.
So I was thinking about this today, actually. This is not in the album notes. And I don't know if it exactly qualifies as one of my seven deadly sins, but I was thinking about it. I feel like it has potential. So how do you feel about random, super short tracks? Because the track Situations is 1:17. The track Bell is 1:43. Like, do you think that stuff belongs on albums? Like, have you heard any example of that where you're like, oh man, that really added to the experience? Because I kept getting distracted by it.
So here's the deal. I think those kinds of tracks have places on certain types of albums. I think back to when we did The Wall in episode 2 of this podcast, and there are a few of those tracks that bridge the experience together. Now, The Wall could probably be considered more a rock opera than an album. But if it's just a straight up studio album like this is, where it's songs that don't have a continuing storyline or don't need some kind of transition to get you into the mood for the next song, and the album isn't really meant to be played start to finish, and have one continuing theme throughout it, there is no reason to have any sort of filler track. And it's pretty common. It's crazy. I never realized it. But on the 20, 21 episodes we've done so far, half of them have had filler tracks. And I never like the filler tracks. Like, they never work.
It's so strange because I complained kind of bitterly about them, I think, when we did The Wall.
Yeah, you did. I remember.
but...
And man, I remember being offended slightly by that and then thinking, nah, he's right. Yeah, that definitely doesn't belong. This album could be a lot shorter.
I'm sorry I browbeat you with my opinions. That's a personal failing of mine.
It's a conversation, and you brought about change in me. So there you go.
What have I done for you lately? It that way. but yeah, it kind of made me... No, that's not true. I just didn't know how to respond in the moment, and so I did the awkward like chuckle and move on. But which I'm going to do right now. So it gave this album, I think, kind of retroactively gave me an appreciation for small tracks like that that actually do something, like in The Wall. Because those are like you said, like it's a rock opera. You have time for those little diversions. But I just wanted to mention that while we were talking about this album, that I was kind of like distracted and a little put off by some of these. And it's not because the music was bad either. I think the length of the songs is what bothered me, because like Situations is basically like four lines.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's like it's one real verse short
and it's done.
Belle is like a verse in pretty poorly pronounced French. And then like, it's like a, almost like a question and answer. And the question is in French and the answer is in English. Mm-hmm. But the music for both of them is fine. It's just, why throw it in there? If it sounded unfinished and sloppy, if I had to like pick a complaint to level at it, whereas the stuff in The Wall was like, okay, he's clearly has something to say. Whether I like it or not is a different question, you know?
Yeah, and part of me, when I was listening to it and looking back on it, I wondered if maybe some of those shorter tracks were actually more about running out of running time on a traditional CD. You know, back in the day when this was released on CD, and this, it's hard to believe, this is pre-iTunes, this is pre, you know, that entire craze. A lot of bands were limited to, all right, we got to get 61 minutes of music as our max, and then we've got to put in a second CD. And do we fill that up all the way, or do we not? You know, what do we cut to fit that 60-minute runtime of a regular CD? And so I thought that was maybe the case here and why he'd kind of cut some of these songs down a little bit. But in looking it up here just now, the album only runs 41 and a half minutes. So that's definitely not the reason. I agree. I feel like they're unfinished. I feel like they don't go anywhere. The music is a little catchy, and maybe I would not feel the same way about them if it was a 3-minute long song that only had a verse or one set of lines kind of in the middle. I think back to Joe Walsh, Life's Been Good to Me. I mean, that's a 14-minute song that basically has a 9-minute guitar solo in the middle of it and just the band jamming. And there's not that much content for the rest of the song. I mean, would that have worked a little bit better here on a smaller scale? And I wouldn't feel as just, this is out of place and this doesn't work. And I'll agree. Belle is one of those songs that it's like, why is this even on this album? Because it doesn't fit with anything else on this album. But anyhow, we'll talk about that later.
I thought that was odd, and that was a little quirk. And, you know, I kind of wonder, we've talked a lot about songwriters lately who kind of have like an unstated ambition to, or kind of an interest in poetry. And if this were like a book of poetry, not that these lyrics are particularly like deep and astounding as poetry. But in a book of poetry, you're going to not really bat an eye at something super small. So I kind of wonder how often songwriters are looking at it as just like a little piece of written word, as opposed to like, oh yeah, people are going to listen to this and go like, huh,
let me give you
super short.
Let me give you the music equivalent of a haiku.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I didn't dig the haikus. I think you and I are have kind of come down on the same page on that. Do you want to go into the critical reception? We kind of not so subtly hinted at how harsh the critical reception was.
Yeah, but before we do, I did want to kind of circle back. We mentioned Mario Caldato, the producer for this album, who has produced, mm-hmm. I believe, all of Jack Johnson's albums. Don't quote me on that, because I only checked like 6 of the 14 albums, so whatever. But he also, like the other big group that he has produced other than hundreds of little bands and, you know, national bands in Brazil and France, he's the producer for all the Beastie Boys albums.
That is so strange.
So
what a wild swing. That's so funny.
So I saw that when I was doing research for it and was like, oh, wow.
Like, that's interesting.
So now let's get into critical reception.
All right. Well, you want to hit us up with that Metacritic score? I was surprised at it, to be honest with you.
This album got the absolutely dismal Metacritic score of 58. I am positive. I went back and looked through all of our show notes. This is the lowest Metacritic rating of any album we have covered that has a Metacritic album.
Oh, man.
By a lot. The next lowest was 74.
Oh, who is that? Do you happen to remember off the top of your head?
I don't remember. I just remember what the next lowest was.
Yeah.
So, oh, man. So here we are, Jack Johnson, an album we both really liked. What did the reviewers think?
So it was kind of funny. This album fell into sort of a weird space and time where it was modern enough to have online reviews, right? Like publications had websites that put reviews on their websites. But these are also pages that are old enough to have been archived behind a paywall. Or like just straight up lost. So I had a little bit of a challenge trying
critical
to find
404 page. Yes, not found.
This album got 404'd a bunch in my research. But Joe Gross, writing for Spin Magazine, gave this album a D+. He calls Jack Johnson a Jimmy Buffett for dispossessed Fish fans. And said that Jack Johnson had found a lucrative sweet spot between singer-songwriter navel-gazing and jam band expansiveness that barely registers enough with indie rock fans to elicit vague condescension. I get if you're a reviewer, like, and you don't like something, you need to make it known. But he sounds like he has a little bit of an axe to grind.
I was going to say, it sounds like this is his kind of music. And he was the open mic night at 6 p.m. on a Thursday never went anywhere.
Yeah.
We found the guy.
we found him. Repeat, we found him. And then John Perellis from the New York Times, songs on In Between Dreams are so light and self-effacing that they might scatter in a tropical breeze, which is also super harsh. but at least a little bit more accurate. Like, there is not, when you get down to it with this album, there is not that much going on. And so if you bring a bunch of expectations, like, they're going to be kind of shattered, just because it really is just like a dude and his acoustic playing some simple songs.
A dude who cuts his own hair to this day. Playing his own songs.
He was doing that before COVID made it popular.
Oh yeah.
That's amazing. I want to visit Hawaii and just be walking along the beach and see like a figure like cross-legged on a beach with a pair of scissors snipping away, and I'll know.
Oh, no. He's definitely a zero guard electric razor guy. Like, he just shaves it all off. Oh, man.
Yeah. He's just start over. That's so funny.
It'll grow back for the most part.
Yeah, he's not getting any younger. I mean, neither am I, but I'm just saying that hair is going to go at some point. No amount of aloha will keep your hair from falling out of your head.
Which that brings me up to an interesting point. We're recording this in June of 2021. This album will come out early in July, or this podcast will come out early in July, the way it's scheduled at the moment. He will have just turned 47 years old when this episode comes out. So this album that we're listening to, he was our age when he released this album.
Oh, I feel dumb about all the trash I just talked right now. I definitely thought he was older. Yeah, I mean, when you think about it in that scale, like, and he had what, like two or three albums before this?
Before this, and he officially became a professional musician in 1992. But I mean, that's kind of like you making it big and going, I've been a professional musician since 2007, probably.
He graduated. You're adding a bunch of work that doesn't necessarily qualify. Yeah.
Well, he graduated from college in 1997. I think he went to one of the University of California's. Mm-hmm. But he graduated in 97, and his first album came out in, do I still have it open? I do. His first album came out in the year 2000. So 3 years after he graduated.
Right on. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like he's honestly, it sounds to me like he's a very talented dude. If he's an award winning filmmaker and a good surfer and like a pretty solid songwriter, maybe I take my remark about him going bald back. Maybe all that aloha has just made him a super talented guy.
There's his hair, Chris. For the records, I'm showing his long, luscious locks from 2015.
Oh, and for the record also, there are no long, luscious locks for Wood to be looking at. In fact, there's some scraggly fuzz because I haven't shaved my head in a while.
We're both headed that way, man. We're both headed that way. I'm jealous of Jack Johnson, not you.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I didn't think you were jealous of me. So the critics have had their shot. Why don't we take ours?
All right, Chris, we're talking reviews. Before I let you start with this album, I want to just remind our listeners that we use a 6-guitar string model for all of our reviews. One string being this album belongs at the 6 o'clock on Thursday open mic night, since that's our theme tonight, apparently. And 6 being let's get this guy to the Philharmonic right now. Chris, where does this album fall for you?
Well, I think, and this is going to sound like damning with faint praise, but I disagree with the critics. I don't think there's a lot to dislike on this album. I think that's why it's so accessible and why it sold so many copies. I think there's something to be said for music that you can throw on while you're driving to the grocery store or cleaning the house on a Saturday afternoon. And I think the kind of inconsequential sort of tame music belies some lyrics that I think are better than they ought to be. Certainly better than I expected them to be. Certainly Jack Johnson isn't saying that much. But the surprise is that this surfer / filmmaker / environmentalist doesn't have more to say in a more forceful way. All that stuff kind of hints that there's a lot that he thinks about. And I think we just don't get all of it because he's not going to put all of it into his music. I do think maybe he could have said a bit more, and maybe he could have done a deeper dive into some of these ideas, but he didn't. And we got what we got. And, you know, it's hard to say whether it would have landed if he had done more. It could have come off as pretentious. And from my personal experience, It was one of muted surprise, kind of the way you feel when somebody at Denny's brewed a better than average cup of coffee, or you get a decent grade on a test that you didn't study for, but even still kind of knew you had coming up. So all that being said, in totality, I enjoyed it. It was pretty good. I would give this a 4 out of 6 strings. It wasn't the most amazing thing I've ever heard, but I was honestly surprised by some of it. What did you have to say about it? What's your review?
The older I get, the more I feel like music fandom falls into two main groups, at least at the casual level. There are the young people who are listening to what's new and fresh and hip and cool. And then there's the old codgers like me who shake their fists at clouds and tell kids to get off their lawns while talking about a lack of respect for your elders. You know that guy. He's over there in the corner drinking a PBR and telling you that good music died when MTV came on the air and Lynyrd Skynyrd's Convair CV240 fell from the sky. This guy is impossible to please musically unless it came before 1979. And for some stretch, he's probably right. But once in a while, an album comes along that brings both of those groups together. It's so universally approachable that the kids and the codgers all get together and enjoy it. This is an album that's deceptively simple. I mean, not to overuse that word here. Its stripped down island mentality gives it a charm that few can replicate. It's disarming, and it still gets me today, 16 years after it was released. I can remember listening to this album in the car on road trips with my family, doing different things, and my parents both liking it, my brothers and I all liking it. And if anybody knows the five of the original Johnsons before they adopted two little girls in 2005 and 2006, we had such different music taste that it was hard to find something that the whole car could listen to anywhere we were going. And this album and a few other albums that are very similar in tone kind of fit that bill. I still really love this album. I've always enjoyed it. I love when it comes on my playlist or different tracks from it come on, because it reminds me of those times. And it reminds me of just how good something can be without being pretentious or overwhelmingly heady and, you know, kind of snobbish, if you will. Jack Johnson is just, I feel like he's the kind of guy that I'd want to hang out on a beach with and listen to him play music and just enjoy whatever it is he's coming up with. I think he's grossly underrated as a musician, as a songwriter, and as a philanthropist in general. He's accessible, he's fun, and the music warms my soul. This album, to like boil it down to a sentence, is a model of the peace and contentment that I wish I could embody every day. Even when it first came out, I was blown away by his comfort with just doing his own thing. So with that said, In Between Dreams is a 5-string affair for me.
Right on. I think you and I both had really similar experiences, because this was like a super pleasant listen for me. And I know obviously it is for you too. What is your favorite track off of this album?
So it's funny, you kind of trashed my favorite track earlier. We have a habit of doing this. It's like, what do you think I like the most, and just trash that one?
Well, if it's any consolation, we never plan these things.
No, we don't,
ladies and gentlemen. So it just winds up happening.
So for me, my favorite track on this album is actually Good People. There are really no tracks on this album that I hate. There are tracks that I feel like don't belong, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But Good People is the track that I think was just prophetic for the time that it came out to the time we are in today. Social media wasn't the thing that it was. I mean, MySpace was around, but Facebook didn't launch until the summer after this came out, at least to the general public. And here we are today, and people are just out there trolling each other and looking for ways to catch each other. And, you know, you've got all the disharmony that is the internet age right now. And here's this song that came out before all of that exploded into our lives and changed the way we live our lives. And it's asking questions like, where did all the good people go? And we reap what we sow. And look at what's happened kind of in the 16 years since this album came out. I think this song has a lot more to say that it probably didn't even realize it was saying in 2005 today. And so it's my favorite track because of that. How about you, Chris? What was your favorite track?
So I will say in defense of myself here, I did think and still kind of do think that song is maybe a little oversimplistic in its like judgment of people. But I do really like that song. It's one of the songs from this album that gets stuck in my head a lot because the chorus is fantastic.
I find myself tapping the bass line on this track
on
my steering wheel. Like it feels right.
It is one of the groovier songs. And I don't even necessarily think that his lyrics are like, I don't think they're in bad faith.
I was going to say,
I just think it's an easy stone to lob. Like, where'd all the good people go? Well, I think things are more complex than that. But also your note about it kind of presaging the social media frenzy that we all seem to exist in now. That's a pretty good point. Like it is kind of an interesting, kind of sadly appropriate critique of how things are now. But for my money, my favorite song is actually the closer on this album, Constellations.
So good.
It is. It's really cinematic. And it even kind of feels like the kind of song that would play over the ending credits of a movie that like kind of made you think about things. And also like the music itself, we haven't really talked that much about the music because there's not that much to say. It's a lot of like groovy guitar playing, some light keys here and there. But I think the open tuned guitar lick in the song is really charming and simple. And I also like the vocal harmonies on the chorus of this song. I just thought they were just different enough from the way everything else on the album was that it kind of caught my attention.
This is terribly out of place if you're done talking about your best song.
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
So this is terribly out of place, but I do want to stop us like right here and go, Jack Johnson's voice is amazing.
Like, yeah, he's got a good voice.
I get that it's kind of sleepy or whatever because it's like laid back and easy. He's not so round up in what he's doing. It feels like it's just a guy playing on the beach and singing about whatever he's thinking about, kind of like you mentioned earlier. But it is so strong. Just every note that he hits is so precise. It's one of the things that I've actually always loved about him. Across the board, just all of his albums are that way. It's so technically correct and just feels effortless. Like, how do you do that?
Yeah. I kind of wonder, because somebody else that I think of in kind of this vein is Norah Jones.
Yep.
And both of them, I think, have an understated sort of skill to their voice that probably is a lot more captivating live. Which is not to say it's not good on the record, because I think that both of them have just gorgeous voices, but I think people kind of gloss over that really easily. But if you listen to what he's doing on this album and you know, anything like what Norah Jones does, there's a lot of control. There's really a fair amount of emotion. It's just kind of an understated delivery that probably doesn't sell itself as readily as some of the more charismatic performances, you know?
Yeah.
So yes, I totally agree with that 100%. He has a fantastic voice.
Well, that said, what was your least favorite track?
So We actually, this is another thing we do a lot, is we have the same least favorite track a lot. They're either diametrically opposed or we have the same ones. My That's least just favorite a testament track is
to how bad this track actually is.
I think so. The track we're referring to, of course, is Bell. For one thing, Jack Johnson reuses the like starting off a track with some rain. Mm-hmm. Which he did in Banana Pancakes, which is a far superior song, and really fits the vibe of that song. And I don't like hearing people pronounce other languages poorly.
Yeah, I just if your think accent it's like isn't a, right, just let it go.
Yeah, I just don't think it's a good look on anyone. And Jack Johnson is kind of the last person I would accuse of being like thoughtless or careless about that kind of thing. But it did seem a little like, okay, like you could have cut this little tangent and nobody would have known.
On the topic of, and not to like really derail us, but on the topic of singing an accent really poorly, the best interpretation of that I have ever heard is actually on our list. It's a Hugh Laurie album, the actor, the comedian. He did an album probably about 10 or 15 years ago now, and there was a song that he wanted to do, but he could not sing a Spanish accent correctly. So he turned the song into a duet, and so he had a lady sing the Spanish part, and she's like phenomenal, and then he sang the English part, like See? The tags, and it's so perfectly done. And straight up, when he asked, why did you do that, he was like, because I couldn't sing Spanish, so I turned it into a duet. It's like, that would have been really cool here.
Yes, it would have. And considering the content of the lyrics, because just like kind of a quick Google search reveals here, the lyrics are, hey, sweetheart, beauty, what are you doing? Beauty, beauty, how are you? But beauty, I don't understand French. So you'll have to speak to me some other way, which like it's a fun little bit of like, for one thing, it's a fun little bit of innuendo, you know, because the scene is he's like trying to hit on this beautiful French girl and, you know, doesn't have enough French to make it happen. And so he propositions her, but like have a French woman sing the rest of it and then like sing your part at the end or something, or write a longer song that makes more sense.
Well, and here's the deal too. This track is a minute 42. We mentioned earlier, and it has probably the worst, like 3-bar measure of an accordion that just loops over and over and over again throughout the background of it. And
yeah,
it just, it's such a train wreck of a song.
Yeah. It's just like, such a weird little tangent for him to have gone on this album. But I think we have run this one song and an otherwise good album into the ground far enough. Let's say we hit up the Oracle for a cookie.
Cool. Let's do it. This All week right. We're picking from your list. Looks like there's 41 tracks on your list. So 1 in 41 chance. Let's see what we get. Number 15, Phoebe Bridgers' 2017 album, Stranger in the Alps.
All right, we're going to get relevant. This has come out in the last, not even the last 5 years, in the last, well, no.
2017.
Yeah, oh man, it has been 5 years. Are we going to get any, like, are we going to get relevant on this show at all? I feel like all of our albums are from, like, so long ago.
Man, Chris, I'm actually really excited about this album. I knew nothing about it until I just pulled up the Wikipedia and realized that Stranger in the Alps is named after the made-for-TV version of The Big Lebowski, where John Goodman says, "You see what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps?" to correct for an F-bomb that's dropped. So I can already tell you I'm going to love this album.
You're kidding. Yes. Oh, man, I wish I knew that.
Big Lebowski that is, reference.
That is so funny. That's so amazing.
That's it, folks. We have done it. We've listened to all the Banana Pancakes we can. Thank you so much for listening. If you have been enjoying our show, please rate it, review it, and we will read your comments on the air when they come in. Chris, what do you got to say to close us out?
Yeah, if you want to get in touch with us, go ahead and shoot us an email at twodudesandtunes@gmail.com. And don't forget to hit us up on Instagram or Facebook. Tell us what you thought of In Between Dreams. And don't forget to tune in next Wednesday, where we try to get relevant by discussing a 5-year-old album. You guys, take care.